Hello, interwebs, and welcome to Close Up. I'm your host, Joe.
And I'm Justin.
Justin's been eating blueberries, so his fingers are blue, like Lucy McLean's. And if that wasn't a hint for you, and the title, obviously. You know what? I'm not that good at intros. Let's just start. We're going to do Fallout Season 2. Full spoilers ahead.
Yay.
Yeah. So, getting into our medium shot now, what is your background on the Fallout TV series and the franchise in general?
I watched the first season. I thought it was okay. And, I like the games a lot. They're pretty good. Put a lot of hours into Fallout 4. Probably too many.
Platinumed it.
Yeah. But it's been a long time since I've played one, so.
I think as far as Fallout games, you and I are on the same playing field. We both played Fallout 4, and you loaned me Fallout 3, so I know you played that.
Mm.
I played Fallout 3 about 12 years too late, but maybe 20 years, no, yeah, 15 years maybe. Long time after Fallout 3 actually came out, when a lot of my friends played it at the time. And Fallout 4, I played. Fallout 4 was the game that was so long, it basically broke me for video games, and I've never been caught up on video games ever since. It took me like 7 years after the fact to beat that one, despite loving it at the time. I was a pretty big fan of Fallout Season 1, the TV show as well. Go check out Close Up Episode 103 for my review with that for Ryan. Yeah, so getting into our Close Up now, talk about Season 2. I think a slow start builds into a fun, if disjointed, trek through a beautifully realized wasteland. It was weaker than Season 1, but I still had fun with it once it got going.
Yeah, I guess. It picked up. Actually, I will say, having kind of middle of the road with the first season, I actually kind of like this one more, I think.
Interesting take.
Despite not liking the first, three episodes?
It took two or three to get going.
Yeah, it took a while.
I think it really started coming into focus for me about when Lucy got captured by the Legion. They strung her up on the cross, and the ghoul went to fetch her, and that's about when it started clicking. And that's also around the time when Maximus went scorched earth with the Brotherhood and stole the whatever it was called, I don't remember. The
cold fusion thing.
The MacGuffin. The blue MacGuffin that goes in people's necks.
It's the cold fusion thing.
The cold fusion thing. Yeah, so when he blew up the Brotherhood and ran off with that, and Lucy got captured by the Legion, and it got more interesting as it went. I think your mileage may vary on this show depending on what I've seen online with the discussions. Is everyone seems to have their own personal favorite storylines, and they don't seem to correlate with everybody else's. Some people say, man, the only reason I watch this show is for the ghoul. Other people say, man, the only thing that interests me is Norm in the vault storyline. Wow, the only thing that interests me is the Thaddeus and his ghoul. I don't think anyone's saying that, but it's still not the only thing that's interesting.
Whoa, you didn't ask me my opinion yet.
What's your opinion?
I like Thaddeus. I'm invested in Thaddeus. I was glad he got to come back.
I am too. I was going more for a this is the one reason I watch the show kind of fans.
Yeah, that's why I enjoyed the show. He came back in that point, and I went, yeah, it's Thaddeus. Now I'm enjoying the show.
I loved the line in episode 8 that he had. He had one of the best quotes of the whole season. I just finished episode 8 like a few hours right before we started shooting this, and the line that made me laugh a lot was, I used to make money for a living.
That was great. That was fantastic.
When he pulls the sack and his pants out and 500 model caps.
Just falls out.
Count them. I'll bet 500 he lives. He's got his child laborers pulling bottle caps off Nuka-Colas.
It was great.
Yep. And
it's
then his
so
arm.
Entertaining.
His arm falls off.
Yeah, this is normal, right? I don't know what's going on with him, but
that was one of my favorite running gags, was every time he talked to the ghoul and was like, this is normal, right? And the ghoul didn't even say anything. You could just tell by his facial expression.
He's just like, no.
A lot of people theorize that he's not even a ghoul, but he's turning into something else.
A super mutant. I don't know.
They are convinced he got infected with a strain of FEV that'll turn him into... I don't even remember the monster they theorize he's turning into, but they're like, oh yeah, the arm falling off, that clinches it. That's what he's turning into. But not a ghoul.
Not a ghoul. Maybe a super mutant. I don't know. We've been introduced to super mutants' existence in the show.
I don't think they were in season one, were they?
Not season one. Season two introduced it very briefly. I mean, not very briefly. There was a whole scene, but they only showed... I don't even know if they showed the super mutant entirely.
They did. Not entirely, just his face.
Yeah.
Just his face. And
the word super mutant was only mentioned like one time.
I do believe that was Ron Perlman who voiced that super mutant.
I think you might be right, yeah.
Which is pretty cool. That's what I heard about that. I love how the lead up to the super mutants was like they had the bloody nets of sacks that he was dragging the ghoul into. I'm like, oh, we're getting a super mutant. Finally. I'm surprised how much restraint season one had introducing Fallout lore elements, because I'm like, wow, I can't believe they waited till season two to introduce a super mutant and death claws and probably other things I'm forgetting right now. Like, okay, like when Lucy got addicted to drugs or like the drug component of the games, like so many things that I might have expected to see in season one. That I'm like, oh, wow, they're finally, or like the NCR, the Legion, all these factions that would have existed in that area. And I know like the NCR got lip service in season one as basically just the remnants of Shady Sand that got blown up. But this is the first time we see anyone who's actually from the NCR besides Maximus. And you kind of get to see a bit more of the Enclave's deal as well. The only Enclave member we met was that guy from season one who stole the cold fusion to begin with. So we did kind of know they were a thing, but the show never really addressed it beyond what the hardcore fans knew about it already, because, you know, that guy's from the Enclave, but Lucy didn't hear about it. The audience didn't really know what faction this guy was from either. Just that he was from a very technologically advanced group that was very dangerous. And they weren't the Brotherhood. So it was somebody else. And now we kind of know what the Enclave is about. Ever so slightly more. This season really built up what the Enclave is.
Mm-hmm.
At least in principle. We know that they existed pre-war. We know that the President of the United States himself was a member. And that... Walton Goggins' ghoul giving the cold fusion to him was not a good move. They were the bad guys. They probably invented the FEV strain and the death claws. We know that they are listening to basically everything in the wasteland, that they controlled Vault-Tec pre-war. And I think one of the best lines in the entire season is when Hank is explaining basically what's going on, and he said that the surface was the real test, not the vault. Which kind of blew my mind, as never really thought about it that way, but it really puts into perspective what the Enclave is doing. Because as a Fallout fan for all these years, you just sort of see, oh yeah, well we knew Vault-Tec and all the rich people, we knew Vault-Tec had its vaults and they were running their experiments in every vault on different kinds of human psychology. And wouldn't it be funny if, basically, is how Fallout treated all their vaults.
Mm-hmm.
And then in season one of the show, we see, okay, it wasn't just Vault-Tec. It was a bunch of different rich companies like Robco and I'm forgetting the others, but like all the major companies pre-war that kind of bought stake in the vaults and did their own experiments with them, which is why they were all so diverse. And now you see that the Enclave was just treating the vaults like level one, basically, and the surface was their real goal, everything that's playing out on the surface is the real game and experiment that they're running based on what Hank said.
You know, I didn't get that till you're explaining it now.
Which...
I didn't think about it long enough, obviously.
Which is very interesting from a universe lore perspective. It's fascinating, really, to me, because I know some people complain about the Fallout world of like, oh, come on, 200 years past the apocalypse and nothing's changed. Civilization hasn't really rebuilt at all anywhere except like the NCR briefly for like 20 years. Like everything you go to is still a ruin and nothing gets cleaned up. And like, okay, maybe that's true. But you could also argue that the Enclave keeps throwing wrenches into the works to make sure things stay interesting up there. Because the Enclave never seems to pop up until it's at least mildly important. They weren't really a factor in Fallout 4, but they were a big factor in Fallout 3. Mm-hmm. And apparently some of the original games as well. Fallout 2, they had a big presence. Haven't played it yet. And they're just sort of this omnipresent faction in the world that people have heard about but don't really know what it does. They're the Puppet Masters. And it's... this show, as far as I've heard, is in canon with the game's universe. And they will build Fallout games going forward based around whatever lore this show introduces.
Well, so they gotta be really careful what they're doing then.
Yes. Yes, this show is produced by Bethesda. I believe Todd Howard's an executive producer. I saw his name in the credits there. And Todd Howard has said that going forward, whatever Fallout 5 does, for example, whatever Lucy Maximus and the Ghoul did in this show will have been canon in the world at some point. Which is, you know, a lot of people also think that the Ghoul probably was a factor in some of the, you know, westernmost set games. They're like, okay, he knew Mr. House and characters like that. Like, House actually was a character in Fallout New Vegas.
Okay.
I knew that name in advance. I'm like, okay, the only thing I know about Fallout New Vegas is Mr. House, and he's a fan favorite character. So the fact that he was adapted here was... it seems like he was adapted pretty well. He's just kind of this... he's the puppet master who thinks he's the puppet master until he realizes that he's got strings on him too.
Yeah, I liked that element, that they kind of built him up with the whole, oh, the house always wins, until he was like, what if I'm not the house?
Yeah.
That was a very interesting twist.
Now, this one will only be funny to you, but I nearly saw him as a Great Willow sort of character, in that he's the guy who claims to know everything until he's asked every question.
He's useless. Yeah, he actually provides no information at all.
Despite being the guy who claims to know everything about everything. Except the Enclave. Whenever it's the Enclave, I do not know. Always. Yeah. So that's House. All right. So, you didn't care for the first couple episodes. What about them dragged for you?
I'm going to blame it on the clashing between Lucy and the Ghoul, because the way I described it to you way earlier was there are two people that don't get along and they're contrasting very heavily. They both have their heavy opinions. It's similar to Guardians of the Galaxy. They're all clashing.
Yep.
Except when the Guardians of the Galaxy clash against each other, the plot continues to move.
Mm-hmm.
Where in this, the Ghoul and Lucy clash and it like grinds the plot to a screeching halt, basically.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, can we just get on with it? You can argue and still move the plot at the same time. But they're like butting heads to be like completely, we want to do completely different things. I'm like, So why are they even traveling together then? Maybe they shouldn't.
And then he put a sleep dart into her and she power fisted him out a window. And yeah. Then they went their separate ways and got more interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, my big problem with those first couple episodes was really the pacing of it. And I can extend this criticism to the whole season, but the first couple episodes were the most egregious in that the pacing is somehow both remarkably slow burn and lightning fast at the same time.
Yeah.
Every episode is like, okay, these scenes are moving. Like, the episode moves very, very quickly. I'm like, scenes barely last more than a minute most of the time. It's just like, quick, 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 cut, 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 all the time. But because we're getting everybody's plots a minute at a time,
it takes forever for them to move through it.
Like, those first three episodes, there was one episode where we didn't even see Maximus, and, like, Norm disappeared for large stretches of the story. And then whenever they did show back up, it was like, we only get a minute of them. So I'm like, their stories take freaking forever to unfold, but every time I see them, it's moving at the pace of lightning.
I gotta say that for Maximus' story specifically, that one took forever to get through.
Yep.
And I like Maximus. I actually really like Maximus. But man,
yeah. They just... For me, Maximus didn't start paying off until the last two episodes.
Yeah.
So far out of this series, among my favorite moments of both seasons is when he sees the NCR power armor and he's like, wow, this is like meant for me. I'm like one of the last survivors of Shady Sands. This is like my birthright as a Brotherhood of Steel knight and the last survivor of the NCR in Shady Sands.
Mm-hmm.
And then he waltzes onto the New Vegas Strip with his custom power armor and starts fist fighting Deathclaws. This is what I wanted from a Fallout show.
Mm-hmm.
When it was announced, I'm like, yes, this feels just like how I wanted it to feel. It makes the fan in me giddy with excitement. It's just really freaking cool.
Yeah.
And it paid off his character as well. It just felt right for what he was trying to do.
It sort of cheated because Maximus literally bailed from his storyline to go join the Ghouls storyline, and then he got interesting. It's like Maximus is one of my favorite characters, but he's in the most boring plot line. He's in the worst plot line in the whole show, even in the first season. I'm like, wow.
Besides Thaddeus, I don't like any of the Brotherhood characters. They just don't really work for me.
And it's not like, oh, I want to like the characters. No. I want to enjoy them being on screen, even if they're bad or, you know, good or bad. I don't care, but the characters have to be interesting to be on screen.
Yep.
And they're not interesting. They're really boring.
Except for Maximus and Thaddeus, basically.
And,
Kamal Nanjiani was interesting when he was briefly on.
But he was only on for part of an episode.
Basically. Yeah, and it was memorable enough for me because I'm like, okay, so you're just the real piece of crap who's like, humans on one side, ghoul kids on the other. And Maximus made one of the more interesting calls when he bashes his head in with the power hammer and says, I think I just started a civil war. Let's see what happens with that. And then the Brotherhood of Steel breaks into civil war and starts shooting their blimps down over Area 51. And
then we never see that again until it's like over.
Did you watch the post-credit scene?
Was it the one where he's like, yeah, I'm going to be the destroyer.
And then he pulls out a second Death Star.
What did he pull out?
He pulled out the giant
Liberty Prime.
To Liberty Prime. It's the second Death Star. We've seen
so
it. We've seen that once.
It might be interesting, but I don't know. Knowing the Brotherhood plot line so far from season one and season two, it's the most boring plot line in the show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even excited for it to be there. I'd rather just have it happening in the background.
Yep. Right now, I am pretty locked into what they're setting up for season three of, like, hey, the NCR is back, and they are kind of igniting hope again. They have some more soldiers than we thought. Cool. We have the Legion has a new Kaiser, and they're going to take Vegas as well. And all right, so we got the two armies gearing up to take over Vegas. Mr. House is back in play. The puppet master of New Vegas. We got the Enclave and their whatever you call it, their mind control transmitter devices, and who knows who's going to be in charge of the Enclave there now. So, like, all these factions are setting up for open warfare in New Vegas next season, with our main characters kind of stuck in the middle.
Yeah, so they've set up pretty good, but...
Which a lot of people joked online, were like, okay, so you basically just set up the game New Vegas again. Because that's basically what it was, from what I've heard, is the Legion and the NCR and House all fighting for the soul of New Vegas. Except the people generally kind of preferred the NCR because they were, you know, the only decent people in charge. Apparently, that is a long-standing debate among fans. They're like, okay, did you Legion or NCR? And then the Legion are just the absolute worst people on the planet. I like how... Some of the fans said that the show basically addressed these complaints in that one scene where Lucy and Hank are debating the morality of people in the wasteland. And Hank basically said, okay, well, you know, the one side, they charged a lot of taxes and were just kind of annoying. And the other side were like slaughtering a bunch of people. Who's to say what's better? And Lucy was basically like, okay, so you have an actual evil group. And one that's just mildly problematic.
Fair.
Like, yeah, the NCR is not perfect, but they're the best the Wasteland's got. And I also noticed that I'm regurgitating a lot of Reddit comment points, but I do agree with just the ones I agree with, mostly, that kind of click what I was thinking about as well. So people have been pointing out since season one that it's very interesting that whenever the NCR flag appears or they just talk about the NCR or the soldiers are on screen, that that's when the score chooses to play the main Fallout franchise theme. Like when you're booting up the menu of Fallout and the Fallout theme plays, that's the theme they're choosing for the NCR in this show. Which seems to be a very pointed way of saying that this is what the franchise is actually about. It's not all the Wasteland. It's not the Legion. It's not the Enclave. It's not the Vault Dwellers. It's the NCR. It's this ragtag bunch of people who are trying to bring order and society back to the Wasteland for the right reasons. Bring culture back. Protect your average person against the hordes of oppressors and raiders and super mutants and whatever the heck else is out there. The NCR is the symbol of post-apocalyptic redemption. And that's really what it's about. And to see them brought so low, like that one group was just a couple of old people out in the desert clinging onto a dream. And the Legion was full-on civil war. I did love the twist at the end, though, where the note said, I am Caesar, the Legion dies with me.
You mean Kaiser?
Kaiser. That was also one of the best jokes from episode 8, because it's fresh in my mind. We're going to invade New Vegas and build ourselves a palace. Kaiser's palace.
That's great.
Some of the writing on this show is really clever. There's a lot of great dark humor, a lot of, like, winking, knowing humor like that makes me laugh. It's just
Scene by scene, the writing is good. The arc writing, not so much.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... I enjoyed the payoffs at the end for these arcs. And the setups were okay, too. And then I think back on it, and a lot of the middles are just like, okay.
Ah, so they went to the Justin School of Writing. Yes, I've got a beginning, and I've got an end. And middle stuff happens in the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go with that, and we'll write the script now.
Yeah, basically everything I'm thinking of, there was very little middle stuff happens of note. Like, I'll say Lucy, for example. She kind of learned that to be in the wasteland, you gotta compromise sometimes. And the only bit of middle stuff happens I can really think of for her is when she wandered into the shop, resigned herself to stealing because she was high and just kind of knew she needed the objective, found out that one guy got killed, and then she killed the new shop owner. And that was like the first life she took. Intentionally, that wasn't a monster or radiated bugs or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened about halfway through the show. And then that doesn't really pay off again until the finale, where she killed the congresswoman who was begging to die at that point and kind of half debated lobotomizing her own father. Zilly did it himself. Allegedly. I'm not 100% convinced he wasn't just faking it. He clicked a button. I don't know what that's supposed to mean. Lucy had a button too. He just pulled a button out of his pocket, clicked it, and started acting like, who are you? It could have been gaslighting. I don't know.
You know what? Lucy's, yeah, she would fall for that.
I think she would.
She would fall for that.
She's very naive that way.
He didn't get that far, in life.
Yeah.
Like, he's not clueless. He got that far already. There's no way he's just letting her do whatever she wants.
No, I know he's got this dream of his perfect nuclear family. Even he was willing to erase her brain just to make that happen, but it's...
I mean, if he pretends that his brain is erased and that he's a good guy again, that still gets him what he wants, isn't it?
Yep.
He gets to go back to his pretend life again.
I do love the parallels between old Hank and new Hank, that young Hank was also very naive and easy to manipulate. Like all that bit in New Vegas with him holding the briefcase, and like Cooper just got him drunk and got it very easily. And like nobody respects him. He's kind of a bumbling, easygoing assistant guy. And then in the modern day, he's turned into this ruthless calculator, manipulator, who can even throw his own family under the bus for their own good, quote unquote. And it's just very messed up the way he still has that charming sensibility about him, where he can be enslaving an entire group of people and then try to teach his daughter to ride a golf cart. Just totally genuinely. Like, oh yeah, I know. Like, good for you, honey. You got all the way across the wasteland. Have me in handcuffs. I'm going to teach you how to drive as I show you my evil lair. And that's the version of Fallout I love. Like, just the most messed up stuff possible and presented with that 1950s okie dokie attitude. It's the contrasts that make it so memorably fun to me.
But that's the thing, is that goes back to, yeah, scene by scene.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
I guess we've talked about the writing quite a bit. Unless you got something else to say.
If I think of something else, I'll double back to it. But, yeah, I mean, besides the writing, let's talk about the production design and, action and the visual stuff.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
As usual, which is why rating it becomes really hard for me, because I find this story so eh.
The story is middle of the road, but the production design is some of the best I've ever seen on TV.
It's very good. the CGI is exactly the way I like it, where it's looks good enough to perform the way it does, but you still know it's CGI. And, but some of it, like the death claws, some of it was practical.
I did read that the death claws were puppets, a lot of them. The power armor is practical too, still. Yeah.
Except for the last episode was pretty much all CGI for both the power armor and the death claws, as far as I can tell. Maybe shot by shot, but
they might have blended it. I even love the little details in it, like when Maximus's power armor is failing and he's on his back and he just got ripped to shreds. And you see the HUD in his helmet is the same as the video game. You saw like the arm was out, the torso was blinking red on there. Like it's even the little things, like the heads up display are exactly like the games for internal universe consistency.
Mm-hmm.
They really care about the little details like that. Some of the weapons they choose, some of the lines they have about the world. I love the costumes, the different locations, everything from the old Vault Tech, the old Vault Tech towers to the different vaults to Hank's lair to Freeside and the New Vegas Strip. The old world production design as well to see what those places look like pre-apocalypse. You see New Vegas pre- and post-apocalypse from Coop's perspective. And you get to see, and once again, the costumes as well. You get to see, like, what life was like in the, I think it was like 2077, 2060s, something like that. Maybe later. Yeah, I think it's 2060s. The outfits they're wearing, the fashions, the cars, like the 1950s style car with a fusion reactor on the back and stuff like that. The Legion armor, the NCRs, just like all these different factions and locations and people they meet. Everything feels distinctive in the world. I know who you are just by looking at you and the environment you're in. Every random place from abandoned hospitals or wherever they find along their journey looks pretty good too. The monsters, the scorpions, the rad roaches, the death claws.
Mm-hmm.
Everything they come across is just really well realized in world. Never breaks my immersion. The makeup on the ghouls as well, love that still.
I find that very impressive. Like how, I know they're doing it on purpose, the side shots where you can see clear through it.
Mm.
I know they're doing it on purpose just to show it off a little, but it is impressive.
Yeah.
It's pretty, pretty good.
Yeah, I like the sound design as well. When I hear the death claws roars or the guns going off or like in vats, like the way the gun bullets and you can hear the reverberation in the bullets, just like in the games too.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, like the power armor, the whirring of the gears and the clanking, and it's all intricately made. And the needle drops, of course, too. Classic Fallout. I think they maybe overdid the needle drops in the first half of the season, where I'm like, okay, every scene, I'm like, does it need a needle drop? Probably not. And then they started...
I think it did, because they knew it was boring.
Maybe. Maybe. They always...
I don't even think that's a hot take.
No. Now that you say it, I don't think so. I didn't think about that, but I think they doled them out a little bit more in the back half.
Mm.
But the back half was more interesting, and they didn't really need that energy kick up. So you might be onto something there. Yeah. So. Oh, yeah, and the gore. I love the gore. And the action as well. Seeing the Deathclaw's head blow open with the bullets after Vats. And, like, everyone had bloody mess set this year. Yeah. So, yeah. In a nutshell, The story was hit and miss. It had a lot of great scene-by-scene moments, but when you stop and think about it overall, you're like, huh. That didn't quite come together the way I wanted it to, but more of it worked for me than it didn't.
Well, it acts like episodic TV almost.
Yeah.
But it's made in the format of, like, what do you call that?
Anthology, serialized.
Whatever they're doing now with all these streaming shows that are like 8 episodes long and that's it.
Limited series.
Yeah, like, that's the format it's made, but the episodes feel like episodic TV.
Yeah.
So it's sort of blending the two versions, but it's not meshing correctly, I think.
I think the problem is that they have so many competing storylines going on. Mm-hmm. If you took one character as a focus per episode, I think it would feel like proper episodic TV. This is Maximus's episode. This is the ghoul's episode. This is Lucy's episode. This is Hank's episode. Testing in the vaults and blowing up mouse heads.
Probably. Yeah, it does cut around a lot. And there's a lot of storylines running at one time. I do think that some of that...
Like, think about Norm's storyline. There was enough meat there for maybe one good 40-minute episode of a TV show.
Well, I think they do need...
But they dole it out over 8 hours.
To do A plot, B plot, but they're doing A plot, B plot, C plot, D plot, E plot.
Yeah.
And trying to combine them all into each episode, and it's like...
The finale was the most egregious for it, when they put everybody in, and I'm like, wow, every freaking scene is like 30 seconds long, we're seeing something different. Which, they kept the intensity, because most of the scenes were at their most intense points by that time, but... Cumulatively, you can feel that they're trying to squish a lot in.
Mm-hmm. No, it definitely, you definitely feel it.
Yeah. So maybe next year they'll kill some people off, or they'll pace it differently. I think pacing is the main problem this year.
Yeah.
Just the way it's all spliced together.
Yeah, that's why it's the story. The pacing is kind of meh, but the acting is really good. The set design and production is really good. And the writing, like the dialogue writing is humorous too.
Yeah, scene by scene, it's like there's great banter. It makes me laugh a lot.
Yeah, it works pretty good, but it's hard.
Okay, speaking of the dialogue and like the banter, I gotta get a little bit political. So I know I had to read up on America's treatment of Canada and the Fallout universe. Apparently, in the very first Fallout game, like the very first thing you see is an American soldier in power armor, like shooting a Canadian in the head execution style. That's like the opening scene of the Fallout universe, basically. So apparently this schism has been there for 30 years. Or however long this franchise is around. I'm like, are you like commenting on modern topics or what?
Yeah, I thought that was interesting too. I'm like, that seems pretty relevant.
I definitely got like white hot fury boiling in my blood when Chet found Stephanie's passport. It's like Canada, annexed territory of the United States. I'm like, this is too relevant. Infuriatingly so. And I also, there was also that line when Stephanie's getting out and her mom's like, don't think of them as American. No, sorry, don't think of them as human. Think of them as American. I'm like, yeah. Shoots the US border guard. And it was also pretty dark at the end of that when they do their pan outs of all the things and you see like the Canadian border, there's like Mounties strung up in nooses hung up on the border with a banner that says the big 51.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. I'm like, okay, that's not an in-universe reference. That's a real world reference. That's gotta be. But yeah, it made the Canadian...
Well, it's canon now.
Yep. Yeah, that so that stuff made my blood boil, but it definitely connected me to Stephanie a little bit more. I'm like, oh, you're just a Canadian freedom fighter who's gone to the States and worked your way up to the Enclave, basically. You managed to survive for 200 years and weasel your way into this system. I'm like, cool. But yes, going back to what prompted me on this train, one of my favorite jokes of the season was at their wedding with Chet. It's like, so I think she killed Woody. Chet, you're getting cold feet, man. It's normal. It's fine. She's 200 years old. Yeah, that's a little bit weird, I guess. She's Canadian. What? That's the one that
finally makes them turn against
her. Set the whole vault into riots and chased her into her office.
I don't know. The Canadians must have done something bad. Must have done something really bad to make them all upset.
They resisted American Manifest Destiny, I'm assuming. That's probably it. I don't know the lore.
Maybe we'll find out the lore, considering it's a plot point for a character.
Maybe. Learn a little bit more about why. Why Canada? Look, I know in the Fallout universe, that's part of the thing that people don't get the satire of, is that America was never the good guys in this universe. Like, yes, there are point of view and everything set in America, and they're like at war with communist China, not Russia, communist China, in the Fallout universe. But they were never the good guys. It was never a just war. They annexed Canada. They basically treated them like slaves. They had this retro-futuristic utopic society that was like the epitome of capitalism. And it was just as bad as you'd expect under the surface. It's like a commentary on actual 1950s Americana, where, great, the aesthetics, the vibe, the ideologies, everything seems cookie-cutter, clean, neat, lavish on the surface, and it's hiding a very dark underbelly. Like the biggest corporations in the States plotting to blow up the world for profit. Like we see in season one, or just all the experiments at Vault Tech. It's a critique of the system using the most idealized version of what that system looks like. 1950s Americana. All of Fallout's just one big satire. Yeah. Excited to see where it goes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you were tepid on season one, and you'll be here for season three? Or am I gonna need to drag you into that, too?
You had to drag me into watching the second season. Without the show, I probably wouldn't have watched it, actually. But the second season's got me a little bit more interested in the third season, maybe?
Yep.
I mean, I'm crossing my fingers, but...
I think if they worked on their pacing and their episode-over-episode structuring, season three could be something real special. I think this is like a bridge season. Season one was like, hey, we have a very strong focus. Let's find my dad. Cool.
Well, they realized that the ghoul was the best part of the show, so they went, okay, we're going to have the ghoul's storyline and also the ghoul's past storyline be equal parts that are equal to all the other characters. So the ghoul got a double dose. They're like, oh, we're going to double down on him. And that kind of worked.
I'm not disappointed. I think there's enough meat for more in season three. Like, still want to know how he ended up working parties. And
well, we still don't know how he ended up, at that end point and how he got separated from
Janie.
He literally had Janie in his arms when the bombs were going off. So how did he get so separated from them?
But somehow she ended up with Barbara and he doesn't know where they are?
Yeah. We still don't know how that works. Maybe they don't know how it works either.
That's why they're waiting so many years to tell that part of the story. Yeah, so... Fallout Season 2 final ranking. I am still on the fence. Because... I think the critic in me says this show is flawed enough structurally that I want to say it's worth a watch. So like right in the middle. But also I'm a huge Fallout fan, and I think this is, despite not being a one-to-one video game adaptation, I think Fallout is the best video game adaptation I've ever seen. I love The Last of Us show, season one. I think that was a great adaptation of a game in terms of a one-to-one story. But I think this exceeds my expectations for how a Fallout's video game world could be adapted in general without mm-hmm. having to follow a specific storyline. They captured the factions, the aesthetic, the music, the dark humor, the general vibe. So as a Fallout fan, and as somebody who enjoys the actors on this show and just everything that they're doing with it, I'm going to lean into pretty darn good. Even though it's very flawed, I personally find enough enjoyment in it that I call it pretty good.
I'm going to say I'll give it a good, I think. I'll give it a good. I really want to say mid-tier garbage, but it's very difficult.
And I get why you would, because it's like, it's right there. It's at that 45 degree of like, it does so much so well, but it's also very
mid-tier.
It's also mid-tier in other ways.
Yeah. That's why it's very hard. I'm going to say good because I give the first season mid-tier easily.
I think I gave season one very, very high. It was either must-see or pretty good. The same I'm giving this one. I should have double-checked my notes. But yeah, I think the thing that I break down in my own mind is when it comes to production design, like the filmmaking and writing, I think writing is in the middle, but it's usually pretty consistent. And scene by scene, I really enjoy it. And then production design and filmmaking and costuming and like all that stuff is definitely a thumbs up for me. So I think on balance, I have to say thumbs up. Because even the stuff I dislike about it is still average at its worst.
Yeah. See, my line is rewatchability. And when I think about rewatching it, I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, the first 3 episodes. But then it's like the back episodes. And I'm like, okay.
See, and I'm also in a weird fence like that too, because the thumbs up is my rewatchability metric as well, and I don't know if I would watch season 2 start to finish again, but I love so many scenes in it, I would watch a ton of these scenes again. But would I watch the whole season again? I don't know, but I'd watch a lot of the scenes.
Yeah, that's why
I think I'm giving it
a good, because there were some things that were entertaining in the first 3 episodes. Like, they're definitely snack episodes where you just get up and walk away, but
slow start, for sure.
Yeah, I'll stick to good. That's, I guess.
Okay, so that's Fallout Season 2. Probably see it for Season 3, if it comes out any time in the next 2 years. I hope they don't push it any further than that. I don't want them to push it even that far.
They will. That's how TV works now.
Release TV consistently. More than two. Once a year. Go back to once a year, please.
This is why I watch anime now.
Consistency.
Consistency.
And quantity. Quantity,
yeah,
and
consistency. That's true. Yeah.
Quantity meets consistency. A rare.
And there's a fine line of quality control, too.
Yep.
It's not always top of the marks, but it is when it's needed.
Yep.
Which is fine.
The few animes you've shown me are consistent, bare minimum.
Yeah.
All right. So, where can we find you?
You can find me on Instagram at jchurchtpm.
And you can find me on Instagram at ThoughtPlane Media. We're actually posting more now. Updates. Yay. That, I don't like the way that like it said that. Yay!
It's too late.
Sounded too low energy. Yay.
Yay, I have to do social media posts.
And you can also find me on ThoughtPlane Media at Patreon. That's where we post everything, all-purpose feed for everything we do here. So, this has been Fallout Season 2. See you next time.